Well, welcome to another conversation with SYD Life. I'm Olivia Gilbert, and today we are joined by certified life coach Jane Lee, and we're going to be talking about boundaries and achieving a healthy work-life balance. So important. Thank you for joining us today, Jane.
Thanks, Olivia. Great to talk with you.
I'm so excited to chat through some of these things. Firstly, what are boundaries and why do we have them?
Yes, it's an important question. Boundaries is often a misconceived, it's got misconception around that word. It's been bandied around a lot, you know, in life, and rightly so, because it is something that we need to be aware of, that perhaps we have not been attuned to in our growing up stages that are formative in these things. And so a boundary is very simply a property line. And we can see that clearly in external things, fences, hedges, you know, gates and all that, that are physically seen. And that means we understand where something ends and something else begins. And so that's the same principle that happens internally. We have things inside us that are actually put in there. We're designed as human beings to have things inside us that we work with, that we utilize, that are important, and they're actually treasures. And so if we are not aware of these treasures, we can't define them, we can't use them properly, we can't be aware when they are being violated or used improperly. We don't have a sensitivity or sort of a radar that tells us that something is not in good order here. And so boundaries really are, they do two jobs. Number one, they define our internal structure, and they protect what is in there. So if I can't define what is inside my my internal structures, another way of saying boundaries could be to say my internal structure or my the affects of my life, the things that are personally mine that I have to be responsible for, give an account for, use wisely, and that will bring good results in my life. If I don't use these things wisely or be aware of them even, they become wasted, they become purposeless. And usually it's like anything, if you don't care for something, it degenerates. And, you know, life goes down the gurgler because I'm not aware of the importance of these things inside me.
So are those treasures, would some of those things be like our time, our relationships, our
emotions? Absolutely. Those are actually the outcomes of our treasures. But the real things that are personal to every person, there's a little list of them. There's about 10, I think, if I can rattle them off my tongue. They are our feelings, our attitudes, our behaviours, our thoughts, our choices, our talents, our limits, our loves, our desires, and our time use then comes out of how we value these things and what we do with those. We will prioritise about our life and the way we use our life in the way we manage these personal things inside us.
So would one step at the start be recognising that we have permission to be in charge of those things?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Yes.
Many of us might need to start right there.
Right there. So, yes, and we can grow up in our formative years of not being trained in a way that would tell us that those things are valuable or those things are important, because they become the things that we go into our life with. And if we're trained to believe they're just incidental, or particularly feelings. Feelings are amazing data for our life. And so if we don't use our feelings or use the data that feelings give us, and not even aware that feelings tell us things that are really important. So if we're used to sort of stuffing our feelings down, denying feelings, just get on with performance, because feelings are irrelevant. You know, some people are trained that way in early life, and some people are trained to feelings are everything.
Yes.
Just go with your feelings. you know, and there are no structures that yeah. balance that. That there's no wisdom in the ability to use our feelings wisely. We either led by them yep. or we deny them. You know, those are two extremes, which we really don't want to be on either end of that.
No. And something I've heard you say before, which is why I love your boundaries content, is that you talk about how the goal is love, because I think we have heard maybe boundaries not done well, or where boundaries might come across self-serving or perceived to be maybe self-centered or self-preservation. But I love that you talk about the goal is love. And can you speak a little bit into that for me?
Yes. The goal of boundaries is love, because we could use another other words for boundaries. We could say the goal of self-control. You know, that's really self-management. The things that I do with myself, it's actually the hardest thing to do is manage myself. Yeah. You know, I can get very good at controlling environments yeah. and controlling other people. And we do, you know, mostly end up in adulthood being quite good at that, you know, until we become aware that controlling other people is not a workable proposition for success, in fact. The workable thing is that I'm self-managed, I'm self-controlled. Yeah. And when I'm self-controlled, it leads us into a zone of love.
Yes.
And whereas the control of other people and control of circumstances, so I can, you know, put my hands out in with my palms facing people and pushing away and managing my environment, rather than turning my palms in toward myself and say, I will manage me. And that will be a much better outcome. So I can take me anywhere and into even controlling environments and places that are not healthy and still be self-managed and intact. And I can, you know, go forward and be in peace and self-controlled. And that will lead me into the love zone, a place where love is able to be found. And really, love is a universal need. It doesn't matter where we are or what we think or feel about anything. What we really want in life is to experience love. But love is quite mechanical. It's not this, you know, ethereal thing that is a feeling oriented thing. Love has two components. One is that I can be relational. And I can also be structural at the same time. And so if I'm all relational and have no structures in my life, I will not actually enter the direction of love. I will probably go down a fear road, because love and fear actually don't cohabit. They oppose one another. So I really get to choose which direction I will follow. So if I am choosing self-control in my life, and that's the process of muscle, really. It's like a muscle, building a muscle. It takes a bit of time and awareness and intention to build that self-controlled muscle. But the components that are relational and structural, another way to say that, you could say it is free. The essential components of love are freedom and responsibility. So talking about boundaries, we're really talking about freedom and responsibility joined together. And that's the kicker, joined together.
Yep. At the same time.
At the same time. And so, so boundaries really are about protecting love. Mm. So when I am a self-controlled or I'm a free and responsible person, I will be walking toward love. And that will set an environment around me where I will be successful, because people respond to love. They don't really respond to fear. We're not wired for fear. We're actually wired for love. That is a psychological and human condition. We are wired for love.
It's amazing. So Jane, tell us, are there ways that we can identify what areas in our life might lack boundaries?
Well, we could, first of all, be self-aware, and sometimes that is even not something that people think of, to be self-aware. They think of be environment aware, or be aware of other people and be mind reading all the time and be sort of checking out the environment all the time so that I will be safe, when actually the other direction is more healthy, to say that I will be self-aware and bring myself into a circumstance. And that self is a loving, self-controlled self. It's free and it's responsible. That if I feel that I am not that, if I feel that I am man-pleasing everybody, if I feel that I don't have a good no, I'm not comfortable with the word no. No means something bad, or no means an unloving attitude, which is not true. Mm. And so therefore being self-aware that I'm aware I'm not comfortable with the word no, I'm not comfortable with the word yes, I'm not comfortable with something, that will tell me that I can look inside and see where perhaps I can grow.
It's amazing. I think that is a really big area in boundaries, is one thing being aware that we might need them, or being aware in the areas we do need to speak up and say a clear yes or a clear no. So how do I handle that feeling of maybe shame or discomfort when my boundaries, if I do speak up and have a clear yes or a clear no, how do I handle it if that offends someone or lets them down?
Yes, that's a great question that we all probably face. The idea that I am a complete being, that I end at a certain point and someone else begins at a certain point. So there is a separateness in there. And healthy boundaries are really about good separateness, because good separateness creates the ability to have good togetherness. Mm-hmm. So if I can't see the separateness of my own life, I will come and want to blur that into other people's lives, and therefore I feel responsible for how they feel, that little list that we said before, that are our personal treasures, how we feel, how we what our attitude towards something is, behaviours, thoughts, feelings, challenges, desires, love, limits, everything that we mentioned before, that little list is about our separateness. So if I can't come to another person and be aware and understand my own separateness, I will blur myself into them and be responsible for how they feel about my no, or about my definition of what I need to define myself, how I need to define myself. If that person is not comfortable with my no, and I start to feel guilty, or I worry that that person is not going to accept my no well, I probably need to come back and say, do I understand the validity of my own separateness? If I don't, I will probably come into some guilt and feel that I need to be responsible for how someone else feels about the way I define myself. And, you know, I'm intentionally trying to define myself well. If I'm being a responsible person, and actually to backtrack that, responsibility has two parts. We have freedom and responsibility, the components of love. Well, responsibility has two parts also. The first part is to be responsible for me, and then to be responsible toward other people.
Not and for, that's the loving, big difference.
It's the loving part. Am I ignoring the responsibilities of love? So if I'm irresponsible, I'll come and just define myself and expect you to take me because I'm valid, you know, and I sort of roll over people's other people's life and not stop when I come to another person's life and have respect for the separateness of another person and how they might feel about what I'm about to say or do, or how I define myself. So there is not a lack of empathy in my defining myself or my saying no. I can still say no and empathize with how that might affect someone. And, you know, I truly care that that does affect you that way, and I will do everything to help that, but I still can't shift my no, because that would be not responsible for the well-being of my own life. So therefore I have to have a definition. But I am aware and I care about the way my life impacts another person.
I think something really key that you said there that has struck a chord with me is that we are responsible to people and the treatment of people, but not for.
That's so
for
good.
People.
You got it.
Not for their feelings, their reactions.
That is right. That is right. And the ability to separate ourselves, where I end and where you begin, and the respect that is housed in that separateness, because we can do that without respect. Yeah. Also, we can be just responsible for ourselves and not responsible to love other people. And that is not the love zone.
No.
That will take you actually into a fear place, because then we're always checking how people are receiving me and whether or not that will make me successful or not. Mm. And so I become a manipulator when I'm living that way. But when I'm genuinely concerned and understand the separateness and the respect that comes in that separateness, I will not be a manipulator. I will genuinely care.
It's a lot of freedom from boundaries,
absolutely,
isn't there? I love it. It's a message of freedom.
It's the train tracks, you know. If what happens if the train is designed to be on tracks, but we want to rebel from the tracks? These are laws and principles of life that work.
Yeah.
And we ignore these principles to our peril, really.
Yeah. I want to take a little moment to talk about work-life balance, because I think this is something that's really key, particularly these days with work from home and, you know, you've got your family and your kids maybe in the next room and you're trying to do meetings and then it's 5 o'clock and, you know, we talked before a little bit on maybe you're on salary, so it's even hard. It's not like you have a 9-to-5 job. Maybe you have key responsibilities and it can be really hard to define work and life. Mm. So firstly, how can boundaries help us to separate work from our personal lives? How do we do that well?
Well, again, the principles are all the same. It doesn't really matter what environment you take them into, because it's the self-control of me.
Yes.
That is the important thing. And so therefore, I do need to be able to define my needs and my responsibilities and to be clear about those things. And there's ways to do that. There are things that I can control and things I can't control in life. The things I can't control in life, I can put to the side because I can't control them.
Yeah.
And therefore, I need to focus and attend to what I can control and the things that are in my sphere of control of myself. So when I come to be able to separate that, if I've got self-control working well in my personal life, I can apply that very easily to my work life. And it really, it's the whole of life, because work is a very big part of our life, paid or not. We always, you know, it's healthy to be working on something and to be attending or investing ourselves in something. People with no purpose are not happy people in general. And we might think it's fun for a while, but actually the end of the game, it won't be fun, because we will have lost that satisfaction that we get from work, which is part of our nature, human nature.
I love that you said too how it's self-managed, because I think there's maybe different industries or organisations that can lend themselves to maybe being more well-being focused, or certain companies that might do things to help us define where work starts and ends. But I love that it is something that we can manage ourselves. And so no matter what environment we walk into or what season we are in our workplace, that we can achieve this. It is in our control. I want to ask a question. If you've had a really, really bad day at work and your head hits the pillow and you're spiraling and thinking about, you know, all the things that you did wrong at work, or that, you know, how do we stop those feelings of maybe a mistake and a failure at work not becoming, I am a failure or I am incompetent?
Great question, yes. Well, to start with, I would say that failure is it's not terminal.
Yes.
It's not a terminal illness.
Feels like it sometimes,
it does.
Doesn't it?
Failure is an opportunity for feedback and growth. And so if we view failure that way, we will have a hopeful and positive attitude toward failure, that it's not terminal. It doesn't define me. It just defines what I did that day and how that day went. And I'm open to learning from my feedback. My failure will give me the feedback I need to do that better tomorrow. So if I'm a person who's got that attitude, that's a healthy approach, a healthy attitude toward failure in the first place, I won't need to, you know, go down a hole. When I fail, I will actually have a buoyancy about that failure and an anticipation of what it will teach me.
It's amazing. So we all want to give our best to our workplaces. We want to have a strong work ethic. We want to have a good reputation. We want to support our boss and our teams. We want to work hard and work well. But how do we know where to draw the lines, and maybe what are some signs that we need to put some boundaries in place with our workplace or our how we're doing our work-life balance?
Well, I think the most common feelings are where we enter that awareness. And if we don't understand that feelings are our interpreters of what's happening in our life, they tell us the condition of our heart. If I'm feeling something, that's a good indicator that I need to stop and take note of something.
That data that's flashing.
That big data. Yeah. And, you know, we'll use that in a kind of business sense, but in personal sense, it's equally important. We gain information from this feeling world. And the biggest feeling, I think, that comes up, or the most immediate feeling, would be stress. Yeah. And where our stress levels start to rise. And if we're aware, and, you know, that begins with an awareness, if we are aware that our stress levels are rising, that's big data. And so we would stop, and in a healthy way, stop and take notice and take a little time out, because the time spent to listen to that feeling of that rising stress will be time well spent, because it's actually valid time use, because it will give me the information I need to put something in order or to do something that I need to do, because I've listened to that feeling. Or I've been aware that my stress levels are rising. You know, there are certain things in my personal life that I say, oh, my stress level just goes, whoa, it just hits really high velocity.
Yes.
And certain things. And everyone will be different in that way. But it's personal to the person to listen to the feelings.
What are some symptoms, I guess, of stress, maybe, if you maybe not quite attuned to those emotions, or maybe you're in high stress environments where I think this is just live.
Yeah.
What does stress maybe feel like? What are some warning signs to look
stress
at?
Feels out of control.
Right.
It usually feels like I'm overwhelmed and under-resourced.
Yes. Overworked and underpaid.
That's right. And so because it has to do with resources, stress means I don't have the resources I need quite here, and I'm out of control, I'm out of my depth. I don't know how to go forward and keep myself intact while I actually do the work that I'm, you know, intentionally setting out to do.
And can resources be things like, I haven't had enough sleep, I haven't had enough time off, I haven't had enough food, I haven't had a lunch break today, or...
Yes, and that's the personal self-awareness that we need to be able to keep ourselves. That's responsible for me.
Yes.
And responsible to you, which is to the workplace or to the job at hand or to the people that I'm working with. But responsible for me is if I've lost me in some way, I've lost connection with me and my needs and the things I value and believe. If those things are being challenged or I'm not feeling at ease with something, I need to come back into myself and listen to those things and spend some time either, you know, if you're on a salary, so to speak, it may not be a 9-to-5 job, but where you spend time taking time out of that day, that is time well spent to acknowledge those feelings and to, you know, a piece of paper and a pen.
Can do
It's, you know, forget the device. Get out the pen and paper and put a line down, a vertical line down the middle of a piece of paper and say, what do I have control of and what do I not have control of? And I write down in, you know, the column that says what I have control of, write those things down, because there's something about the hand, the eye, the pen, the paper, the heart, the whole of me. Putting something down on a piece of paper is very constructive to clear thinking. And the other sides, what I can't control, when that comes up, you write them down and you leave them on the other side of the page and you attend to what you can control. That is a really good practical thing to spend time. If you're talking about what do I do in that time when I'm aware that things is, that's a good piece of structure to put in. And then out of that, we will usually find, most definitely find, that something will come to us that is a pathway.
It's amazing, because it's I guess recognizing what you said before, what we are responsible for and what's not ours to be responsible for, and we don't want to live in that zone of manipulating or controlling our outside environment, but bringing our best selves and being responsible for putting the right inputs in our lives. I want to ask a question about working from home, because particularly since COVID, this has become a very popular style of work. And I know my husband works from home half the week and he loves it, and he thinks he gets much more work done at home without the interruptions of the office. But I think there's great advantages, but there can also be some complexities. So can you share some, maybe some structures or some boundaries that might be helpful for people who are working from home?
One of the things that is very helpful is the structure of what I'm doing. Structure gives us a sense of confidence and peace about where we're going and the direction we should pursue. And that structure includes things like a work description. You know, very, very basically a work description. If we are salaried, that work description is a broader thing, and we bring ourselves to that in a different way. But perhaps just a 9-to-5 job, the work description will give me a sense of self-control, because I know what my boundaries are. I know the sphere at what I'm in, you know, the intention of my employer is for me.
Yes.
So I'm comfortable in that. If I don't have a clear work description in the first place.
An updated job description.
Yes, yeah. an updated job description. And if there's any lack of clarity in that, or, you know, as we proceed down in time in our job, these things morph and change slightly, and we can be aware of changes like that, and then we can get that updated work description. But a work description, if there isn't one and it's very cloudy in my own mind, I need to clarify that. That would be a helpful thing. And if I'm in a salaried position, I would need to define that for myself and be very clear on the expectations of my employer, and clear on the expectations of myself.
Yeah.
And there's also, so that's one thing, structure. About that, if that isn't clear, if that's not organised really well, that can be a blurry difficulty that we hurdle over every day. And so let's not do that.
It can bring so much stress. It's that thing of not knowing where I end and where I begin. If something goes wrong, was I responsible for that? Was I not?
Yes,
yeah. So the clarity around a job description.
And working from home is, you know, if an employer has an expectation of 40 hours of work, but he's only employed me for 20, you know, it's not my responsibility to do that 40 in 20.
Yes.
It's my responsibility to do the 20 well.
Yes.
And so then I could go back to my employer and say, because this is where I end and you begin, what 40 hours, you know, you've given me 40 hours of work, but I'm employed for 20. Which 20 would you like me to do? That is not my responsibility to define that. That's my employer's responsibility to define my work, the expectations of my work. If I'm in a paid salary position where I define my workday in that way, I still need to define that. What is the expectation? And if I define myself that I'm going to work a 9-to-5, I'm not going to work 16, 20 hours a day. I might want to work 20 hours a day. Go ahead, you know, but that will have an outcome on my personal life. And so that balance that you were speaking of becomes according to my needs and the awareness of my needs. Somebody working 20 hours a day in a 24-hour day cycle, you know, 24-hour period, is not going to be able to sustain that in a healthy way for very long.
Yeah.
We might do occasional things that are crazy and out there, but as a general lifestyle, long-term, that is not sustainable.
Are there some practical tips, such as maybe using out of office or putting the laptop away once you've finished work? Are there some practical things we can do? I heard yesterday someone was saying that they've started not getting out of their car when they get home until they've finished their work calls and work texts, because what they noticed, they'd come inside and then they'd be texting a few things back, or, you know, quickly need to call this person and update them, and they realise that the work zone is just blurring into their home life. So that little habit of maybe sitting in your car and making sure work is signed, sealed, delivered before you open up that car door. Are there some practical things like that we can do to just kind of keep ourselves in
check?
Yes,
that's a great tool to employ.
Yeah,
you just said that is a tool. And employing tools to help us is very useful. So some practical things to, you know, it is – if I define myself on a 9-to-5 work day, well, it's 9-to-5. So therefore, those things on the end of the day are part of the work day. And it is healthy to make a definition there between the two things. This is my work day and this is my home life.
Yes.
And to bring them in to the other is to blur that and to reduce the quality of both, really.
It's hard to do both well at the same time.
You're extending your work life past the boundary of work time is not a healthy lifestyle choice, because work is a lifestyle also. The way we do our work is our lifestyle. To extend that beyond means I'm giving something more than perhaps I intended, and maybe I try and fit those things into my 9-to-5 workday. A person doing an everyday 9-to-5 work life can legitimately include those important communications in their workday. It's not, communication is part of the workday. So therefore, making time for that in the workday within the hours of my life. Then again, if it takes me 10 hours to do an 8-hour day's work, there is something I need to look at. That is it my management, or is it being required with an expectation to do something that is beyond my capacity? Yes. So I would increase my capacity, or I
see
would
if there's some systems or
that's
some tools
right,
we can
look at my
look at our efficiency,
our own efficiency, and or go to my employer and say, I have 10 hours worth of work in an 8-hour day. What would you like me?
What's the priority?
What's the priority? And, you know, I need help to perhaps define that better. There's a great list of in the Boundaries books by Henry Cloud and John Townsend. They have a series, but the original Boundaries books has the 10 laws of boundaries in it. And one law that I really find useful to myself is the law of exposure. So that means that I need to define myself to other people, to myself and to other people. And that means that I need to expose where I end and, you know, where my capacities are, what I feel, what I want, what I love, what I don't want, my values and my beliefs. In some way, I need to be clear on those for myself and to be able to expose them when necessary. I don't need to be saying that all day, but that would be painful. But to be able to express that when needed so people can see where I'm coming from. And if I'm not able to do that very well, the people that I'm working with may assume something different or go beyond where I'm in really wanting to give.
Yes.
And so that law is a great, but the 10 principles of relationship in that book help enormously to define what we need to be bringing into our life, really, and our work is just part of that life.
And the thing that's great about that, it's really living honestly, isn't it? That law of exposure is living with honesty, which is freeing. But maybe giving ourselves that permission to be honest and
yes,
and that can be vulnerable.
Absolutely, and vulnerable is not weak.
Yes,
vulnerable is a strength, and to be able to be vulnerable without apologizing for that vulnerability, and still walking forward and being confident in my vulnerability, not exposing things that should not be exposed or keeping myself intact and private where I need to be private. But to be vulnerable but also confident is a good tool set, a good little tool in your toolkit.
Definitely. I want to ask one final question. I want to speak to maybe somebody who's listening who might be feeling unsatisfied with their work-life balance, who might be feeling overwhelmed or overstretched, or, you know, that maybe they're doing a bad job at home and a bad job at work. Or,
yep.
What would you say to somebody who might be feeling like that? What steps can they take today?
Firstly, I would normalise that.
Yeah, you're not the only one.
No, and to have a sense of self-compassion is important to be able to go forward, because we're usually very hard on ourselves, and the way we are, with the way we treat ourselves, will be really honestly how we look at other people. We may not treat them that way because we think they deserve something better, but we don't treat ourselves that way. So really being honest about, you know, the value there, that I do need to be responsible to treat myself the way I would treat other people in the best possible sense. So if I, first of all, need to be self-compassionate where I feel I'm not up to scratch or I'm not meeting my own personal expectations, and to be comfortable and to assess my expectations. Are they too high? Where are my expectations? Are they harsh toward myself and kind toward others? Therefore, I need to be kinder to myself in the first place. That's just first step.
Yeah.
Be able to normalize where we don't meet up to standards. It's not failure, it's feedback. And so I then need to come and say, so what are the things I can control? That piece of paper, you know, that I write down.
Yeah.
Those things, perhaps be practical and sit down and write down, what can I control? And where am I not kind to myself? Because this kindness to myself releases me from fear, and it brings a warmth to my own life. And really, we are designed to function in that realm, love zone, and not to function in the zone of fear and incapabilities and always missing and always trying to run behind life and catch up. No, that's an out of control feeling, and that out of control feeling is a stressy place, and it's not sustainable to well-being. So to be in control of myself is where we want to be, and so that piece of paper helps me define that, and it also can then help me say, so where is the first next right step? What step can I take now? Out of all these things on my piece of paper, what one thing can I do today?
Yeah.
And what one thing can I even decide to do today? Even the decision, I'm going to decide today that I'm going to take some steps in that direction of this one thing. And that automatically puts me into a feeling of I'm self-controlled. I've started along the way. I've started along the road of putting this in order. And therefore, you know, order does bring peace to our lives, and peace helps us get in order. So we need those two things to be functioning well, and practicality, some feet on the ground, some practical steps will help us take that journey.
It's amazing, Jane. Thank you so much. I love how you speak with such empowerment and freedom, and that
thanks, Olivia.
It's a message that brings a lot of liberty to people. So thank you for your time today. Jane has also, we were so privileged to record some content with you earlier in the year that we'll also link in our show notes below, because Jane has put a 4-part series together on how to navigate different areas in our lives and implement boundaries. So we'll put the link to that in our show notes, and we've also got some more resources from Jane that we'll put in there as well. But thank you so much, Jane, for joining us
today. Thanks, Olivia. It's been a pleasure.